It wasn't that long ago that Oregon Governor Kate Brown declared addiction to drugs and alcohol a crisis in the state, and no one spoke up to disagree with her. By recent measures, Oregon has the fourth highest rate of addiction and the lowest rate of access to addiction treatment. That would appear to be a recipe for continued and increasing addictions and deaths from alcohol and drugs. Work is underway to change all that, and the Oregon Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission is working on a strategic planning process to be finished later this year. Let's hear from people involved in that process and in addiction treatment. Three guests join us. Mike Marshall is the executive director of Oregon Recovers, a coalition of groups aimed at helping Oregon recover. Mike Marshall, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
Aja Stoner is with us, the chief clinical officer at Addictions Recovery Center, or ARC, based in Medford. Aja, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And Joe Wilson from ARC is with us as well, the communications director. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. So let's start with you, Mike Marshall, the governor declaring a crisis in addiction. How long has it been a crisis by any measure?
Oh, I think this has been something that has been evolving for a number of years. You know, there are different parts of this that have led to it. I think back in the 90s, Oregon was known for its prevention work. And in the last 20 years, as we have gone through budget crisis versus budget crisis, recession after recession, we've seen most prevention work in the state really cut back significantly. And it's only in recent years that the federal government has started to measure addiction rates, which, as you mentioned, Oregon has the fourth highest addiction rate in the country, and access to treatment, which is ranks 50th. And if I could just add one more sobering statistic,
sure.
You know, we're going to lose 2,100 people this year to this disease, 5 people a day in alcohol-related deaths, and 1 to 2 drug overdoses a day. That's over 2,100 people. At the height of the AIDS epidemic in Oregon in 1994, we lost 362 people. So in other words, the fatality rate as a consequence of untreated addiction in Oregon is 700% higher than the worst year of the AIDS epidemic. And that statistic alone is sobering, but the fact that we don't think about addiction in the same way that we think about the AIDS crisis, I think is also alarming.
Well, those are some stark numbers for sure. When we describe access to recovery, what does that mean? Are there fewer places available for people in recovery? How do we identify that, Mike?
Yeah, so the federal government does an annual survey, and it from that survey, it's actually polling Oregonians and asking them about their experience relative to their own personal use or decision not to use drugs and alcohol. And then when they've tried to get treatment, what their experience has been. And I think the bottom line here is we have some of the lowest reimbursement rates from the state to treatment providers. And therefore, the notion it's not incentivized to expand the number of beds. In recent years, what we've seen is more and more centers either close or reduce the number of beds or reduce the number of outpatient programs. So it's really a matter of being able to find a treatment facility near you and find a facility in which you can get access virtually immediately, as opposed to here in Portland, you call a treatment provider, they will say, and you know, you're a heroin addict, you're a meth addict, you're an alcoholic, you have a moment of clarity, as we say, and you ask for help, and they'll say, great, call us back every day for the next 3 weeks and we'll try and find you a spot. That's not a healthcare system. That's a, I would say that's a charitable response. It's not a health systems response.
So Aja Stoner, Chief Clinical Officer at Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, give us an idea of the constraints upon what you do and how people find you.
Sure. So we have both an outpatient clinic, a detox center, and a residential program. And so people find us online. We have a great website. We have a walk-in clinic that functions every day from 8 to 3, so people can walk in and hopefully see a counselor. That depends on demand. It really speaks to Mike's issue that of clarity in the day that people walk in. We try to see everyone that we can, but we have limited capacity, so there are days that we have to ask people to come back the next day. We also have issues with our residential beds that Mike just talked about. We have about 80 people on our wait list for 25 beds in this community. So there's pretty stark kind of wait list and capacity related issues, especially in the higher levels of care. So detox and residential, which is what a lot of people need when we first meet them. There are people that we meet too that are able to be treated in an office-based setting. But when you really understand the acuity of addiction and the severity of the symptomology, you understand that most people need some pretty intensive stabilization treatment up front before they can be successful in an outpatient setting.
So if you have 80 people waiting for 25 beds, how often do those 25 beds turn over? What's the usual length of time those are in use?
Yeah, so the average length of stay for us at ARC is 47 days. We set up, and it's really based on individuals, so some stay less than that, some stay more. It depends on their needs, depends on how acute their addiction is. It also depends on their recovery environment and which they're returning to after a residential stay. We have a real problem with homelessness in our community and people being unstably housed, which is a recipe for disaster for addiction recovery. So the biggest barrier for us for throughput in our residential is really safe and sober housing on the other side.
So Joe Wilson, I've read some of your blog posts at the ARC website. It seems like you're in touch with the overall picture in the Rogue Valley. ARC is just one of several places, it seems like. Is it just generally the same sort of situation?
You mean for the different places around town?
Yeah, with waiting lists and all that.
Oh, sure. Well, I would say, to Mike's point and then to Asia's point, there's for various reasons, there's just not enough treatment providers for the number of people that actually need these services. I mean, that's across the board. That's across the state. And that's what's leading to, in part, the situation where access to care. I mean, there are other factors in terms of access to care, transportation, housing, as Asia pointed out. Child care is a huge barrier to treatment. So navigating our different healthcare systems, so the CCOs and that sort of thing, these are all challenges that we're working with folks to overcome just to get them into treatment.
We were talking about Oregon.
Jeff, go ahead, Mike. This is Mike with Oregon Recovers again. If I could just jump in, there are two things here that really need to be pointed out. If you're on the Oregon Health Plan, you have access to organizations like ARC, which are ARC's one of the best in the state, is from my perception, number one. But if you're on private insurance, most private insurers today will only allow you to do 12 or 14 or 15 days and then require that you go into outpatient, which is not, again, scientifically based, medically based. It's just... So on the one hand, the Affordable Care Act required that they start to pay for treatment. On the other hand, the lengths of treatment have gone down dramatically. The other thing, and I think that Joe was just referencing this, is we put all our eggs in one basket, which for the most part is treatment, when recovery support is a huge part of the continuum of care or needs to be a huge part of the continuum of care. By that, I mean simply access to, you know, different forms of recovery, like 12 steps. I am a person in long-term recovery, and I got sober in the 12-step system. But there's Zen-based recovery. There's Native American-based recovery. There's agnostic recovery programs. They're all effective for the right people. But if you don't have access to them in terms of them having a space to meet, let alone then being able to leave treatment and go to a safe housing, if you're going back to your family, which is where you sort of inherited your disease to begin with, or you're going back to your roommates who are not in recovery, it's like taking someone out of curing them of chicken pox or some other disease that actually they can get multiple times and throwing them right back into that environment. And so we need to create a continuum of care at the state level that starts to put investments in recovery support, because that's the best thing for the taxpayer. If we can keep people in recovery for up to 5 years, their chance of relapse goes down to 15%, which is much lower than other chronic diseases like heart disease or diabetes.
We were talking about drug and alcohol addiction in Oregon. Figures indicate that Oregon has the fourth highest addiction rate in the country and ranks 50th of the 50 states in access to treatment. Mike Marshall, you just heard, is the executive director of Oregon Recovers, aimed at correcting things. Aja Stoner is the chief clinical officer at Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, in Medford. Joe Wilson, the communications director at ARC. Questions or comments from you are welcome at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Aja, even in the best of circumstances, aside from Mike's chickenpox example, is there a fair amount of relapse in recovery anyway?
Yeah, so I don't have a statistics in front of you, but one of the things that makes addiction a disease, and I think there is a lot of people who want to argue that addiction isn't a disease, but it meets all of the same criteria as a chronic disease like hypertension or diabetes or something that takes long, once you have it, it takes lifelong maintenance to maintain whatever recovery or whatever gains that you have made. So we say all the time that addiction is a chronic relapsing disease. We expect that when we meet people with an acute substance use disorder, that there will be cravings, there will be trigger, there will be withdrawal, there will be urges for people to use. And so we try to wrap as many safety supports around them as we can and create a safety net for them. So like here at the ARC, we have an alumni group. So everybody who graduates from the residential program can belong to the alumni group. And the alumni group goes out into the community and raises money and they do all of these events. So we have a softball team and we have all of these kind of recovery supports that that Mike was talking about, because we believe that the opposite of addiction is connection. And so we try to stay connected to people and give them a community to belong to for a long time after we treat them.
As I look at the figures that Mike cited earlier from the state about five people dying of alcohol every day and one or two drug abuse overdose deaths a day, would this indicate that alcohol is generally the major problem you're dealing with? I mean, we focus so much on opioids. That's why I ask if alcohol is still the major problem.
So I actually really appreciate you asking that because we operate detox and we operate the sobering center. And so we see a lot of people who need detox from alcohol. That's probably our top admission substance at this point in time, and it has been for a long time. I think that alcohol is kind of that substance right now that it's kind of on the outside, the peripheral, and people aren't looking at it, but we always need to look at it, just like we always need to look at tobacco. We can't forget that tobacco kills more people in this country every year than other substances as well. So I think that while we're talking, I like how Mike addresses it. We're not talking about an opioid crisis. We're talking about an addiction crisis, and it doesn't really matter which substance, but both alcohol and opioids are the most lethal.
So, Mike Marshall, is Oregon Recovers a creation of the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, a partner of APDC? What's the relationship there?
Sure. So we came together 18 months ago because what we recognized was there was nobody in charge and there was no plan for solving this crisis. And our goal is to mobilize the recovery community. And by that, I mean not just people like myself who are in recovery, but as I like to say, the people who love us and the people who take care of us. So our friends and family, and then the fantastic people like Joe and Asia and everyone that works at ARC, we're all in this together. And the idea is to create a political constituency to start demanding change, because for too long, folks that suffer from this disease have been marginalized and stigmatized. Our first goal then was to get the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission to do its job. It was created 12 years ago and was given amazing authority to go and say, this is how all of the money should be spent. So telling the Oregon Health Authority, Department of Corrections, Department of Education, all of whom were operating independent of each other with no specific outcomes in mind, that they were supposed to gather all their money up that they spent on substance use disorder and figure out how do we reduce the addiction rate and how do we increase the recovery rate in the state. And no one was doing that. So 18 months ago, we talked to the governor. She started making different appointments to the ADPC and for the first time put an addiction doctor on there and put a recovery leader, an addictions person from Multnomah County, switched responsibility away from the criminal justice advisor in her office to the public health advisor, which is where the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission should live. It's a healthcare commission. She replaced the executive director and brought in a really terrific guy, Dr. Reggie Richardson, who came over from DHS. And then Representative Tawana Sanchez passed a bill in the previous session that said to the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission, you bring us a comprehensive strategic plan by December of 2019 so that in the short session, the 2020 legislative session, we can implement it and we can fund it. And so Oregon Recovers has been working to get all that to happen. And then I would like to think we are an unofficial partner of the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission and are busy trying to mobilize stakeholders to be a part of this strategic planning process and to make sure that it is as comprehensive but also as manageable as possible, and that it focuses on prevention that it focuses on a new form of intervention, because up until now, the only tools for intervention in someone's life was within the criminal justice system. A principal, the best advice they could give a parent today if their kid is suffering from addiction is get them arrested, because that's the best resources that are available to them. And we need an intervention system, and ARC's doing some really amazing work around this, that it lives in the healthcare system, that our emergency rooms and our primary care doctors and nurses understand addiction, understand the treatment of addiction, and they understand recovery. That's a whole level of education that hasn't currently existed. So we need a new paradigm there. We need treatment so that you don't get told, come back in 3 weeks, that the minute you raise your hand and say, I need help, or the minute your parent says, my kid needs help, there's an immediate connection to some level of treatment. Now, whether that's a bed, whether that's a group therapy session that night, or whether that's a peer mentor on your doorstep that's going to put their arm around you and help you get to the path you need to go, that needs to be figured out, and it's going to be different things for different people. And then the fourth part of this plan that we are really advocating for is what I just mentioned, which is more investments in recovery support, because at the end of the day, if we can keep people in recovery, we're going to have way fewer kids in the foster care system. If we can keep people in recovery, we're going to have way fewer people going into the prison system. If we can keep people in recovery, we're going to have kids graduating at much higher levels in our high schools because their parents are taking good care of them, or they're showing up for class because they don't have an addiction issue. So there's this crisis is the root cause of many of the other issues that our politicians are debating. And what we're trying to do is get them focused on this root cause and get the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission to give our policymakers, our elected officials, a roadmap for how do we fix this.
Mike Marshall is with Oregon Recovers. Asia Stoner and Joe Wilson are with ARC, Addictions Recovery Center in the Rogue Valley. Here is a phone call from Kelly in Cottage Grove. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. First of all, to the gentleman, I would like to say I appreciate your work. You're on the right track. I just would hope that you get input from the people that need recovery. I remember reading about in Afghanistan, oh, this was maybe 15 years ago, but the military went in and they asked the farmers what they wanted. And the farmers just said a glass of water would be nice. And what the United States did was hit them with a fire hose, okay? So I think it's important to talk to the people that need the help. It seems like people that are not dealing with these issues, that have never experienced them, are the ones making policy.
All right. Thanks for that, Kelly. Appreciate that. So you mentioned that the Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission has to have a plan by late this year. So not working, obviously, toward this legislative session next year, Mike. What are the odds? I mean, how much money are we talking about potentially needing here?
So first off, let me just say that there are some fixes that are in the current legislative session. We didn't want to let a session go by without trying to deal with some short-term issues. And there's a House Bill 3095 that simply will raise reimbursement rates by 35% for treatment providers like ARC many others. That is hugely important because addiction is paid, I think, at 40% of what mental health is paid, which is paid at like half of what primary care is paid. So we're just trying to stabilize the workforce and incentivize the treatment providers to expand the number of beds available, not retract. And so I would urge the caller and other folks to call your legislators and ask them to support 3095. There's also a bill to support the development of recovery, peer-led recovery centers. So to this woman's, the caller's point, having people in recovery start to manage some recovery centers around the state and build that out. But she's absolutely right. And that's been the problem in the past, is no one in any decision-making authority in the state was a person in recovery or was able to talk about how addiction had impacted their lives. And we started to change that. The Alcohol Drug Policy Commission, I think now 5 or 6 of its 16 members are people in recovery. I think there was only one previously. So she's absolutely right that we need to make sure that we have the voices at the table who are trying to navigate this current fractured and incomplete system, and those that have successfully done so, so that they can turn around and say, this is where the problems are, and we need to fix that. How much money is it all going to cost? That's really for the plan to determine, because we're spending some money right now, and I think to the tune of $400 million annually, and yet we have the fourth highest addiction rate. We rank 50th in access to treatment. I don't think it's just about money. I think it's about implementing evidence-based programs, programs that support recovery, doing intervention farther upstream instead of in our criminal justice system and waiting until someone's on the street or committing crimes to provide them the health care that they need. We can substantially reduce the cost of addiction, the financial impact of addiction, if we make more investments upstream. And like I said earlier, what that's going to do is result in huge savings in the child protective services and in criminal justice and healthcare.
Asia Stoner, we had a question from Gail and Eugene. I'm going to just paraphrase her here. She just wants to know if there's a program like ARC there.
In Eugene?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that Willamette Family is a wonderful program in Eugene. They also do detox outpatient and residential. Are you familiar with any more, Joe?
Not better.
We partner with Willamette Family around detox and some other programs.
Okay,
so
just time for one final question here, Asia, and that's about Mike is telling us. It's a very long tail. It's not like you get cured and yay, I'm better, and then I'll never have to worry about addiction again. And it sounds like this is one of the major things people need to realize.
Yeah, I think that they need to understand that addiction, it's not like you go into a 30-day residential and you come out and you're cured, right? It's a chronic relapsing condition. It's a chronic disease that goes across the lifespan. And once you have it, you have it. But what I think people also need to hear is that recovery is possible, because a lot of images that we see on the media and things that are portrayed are about this kind of stigmatizing look of what addiction looks like. And addiction really doesn't discriminate. We see people in our clinic from all different kinds of socioeconomic status, who some people who had an injury and that's how they ended up on opioids. We hear all kinds of stories.
Right.
So I think that there's also some stigma and misperception and misconception out in the
public.
Which
we will try to clear up. We have to go. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Asia Stoner, Joe Wilson, Mike Marshall, thank you so much, and onward to improving addiction services in Oregon.